This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. While the people who wake up in the morning thinking about digital signage fully understand and appreciate the value and importance of great, effective creative, there are lots of end users who don't quite get that part of it and still think of display projects as AV technology exercises. It's particularly true with large format display jobs, which are being greenlighted all the time based on lots of discussion around pixel pitch, scale, and cost, but almost none about what will be on the display. Alberto Scirocco is the founder and creative director of the motion and design studio Left Channel, which is technically based in Ohio but is largely virtual. His office, for example, is on the Italian Riviera. Poor fella. I had a chat with Scirocco about the Wild West nature of the business when it comes to design. We had a great conversation about what makes displays interesting and engaging and how the good ones have a function. Alberto, thanks for joining me. You're off in Italy.
Yeah, that's right. I am in Italy right now.
Can you tell me the background about Left Channel?
Well, we started Left Channel about 20 years ago. And, you know, at the beginning when we started, just motion design studio. So a more traditional format, I guess, at the time. Did a lot of advertising, music videos, film titles. And you know, a lot of our gig was really artistic execution. And then, you know, in the arch of time through the years, we've gotten more and more involved into actually crafting some of the messages that we were animating and putting in motion. And it's been an interesting, very interesting road. And of course, you know, markets change in a lot of different ways and technologies have changed in lots of different ways. And one of the things that has been interesting for us has been adapting to all the new stuff. And we kind of have an experimental nature. I come from industrial design and fine art. And so I've always kind of had this, you know, foot on both camps of being, you know, engineer minded, but also have a real passion for really expressive artistic work. And so in the last several years, you know, it's been more and more focused on, you know, really trying to apply strategy to design and making sure that, you know, that we're doing stuff that's useful. and not just pretty.
Right. So this would be more motion graphic design than video edit.
Correct. I mean, we end up having to do a lot of production, but generally our focus is design. And so when we do production, it's generally because it's part of a piece that will have design and animation within it.
I'm guessing if you've been at this for 20 years, that the demand to do things on screens has grown quite a bit, because 20 years ago, digital signage was one of those things where you had to explain what it was. We still kind of do, but now there are so many screens out there and there's so many large format displays where, you know, it moves away from just being messaging to, you know, experiential, engaging stuff where you really, really have to think about the creative.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's part of also what motivated this conversation is exactly that, is the fact that, as you mentioned, signage used to have a very practical, very pragmatic mindset. You know, you think about billboards and advertising, and there's a very, very clear function of what those things are for. Now screens are starting to appear in a lot of different places. I mean, I say now, but for a while, screens have appeared in a lot of different places, and it's bringing a lot more functions to the table, a lot of more opportunities of what screens can do. And some of them are really quite powerful. And you know, so yeah, so the demand has grown quite a bit for us. The nature of the requests has grown quite a bit. Because like you said, there used to be very, very, you know, I think when I first started, there were, you know, Jumbotrons, right? And you were basically doing pixel animation, stuff that looked like 80s video games. on this gigantic screen. So, you know, they were very delineated into what they were trying to do, but now it's, you know, it's wide open. So from, you have art installations, you have places that completely define, you know, placemaking, places that completely define, they'll be completely defined by the screen and the experiences inside. So it's a pretty exciting time, I have to say, for this type of work.
You're in Italy. Left Channel, I believe, is based in Ohio, but you're kind of virtual and you work around the globe, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, we have people from all over. And you know, also when we were very much in Ohio, we still didn't really work in our geographical area. So we've always done national, international work, just because the work is it's just kind of the nature of the work. It's kind of unique, and so it's always attracting people from all over.
In the context of digital signage and big, large format display, what are some of the projects that people listening might be familiar with?
I think there is a couple of Times Square videos that people are likely to have seen. Something we did for Disney and Luxottica. It was very, very, very visible. And you know, that stuff falls actually kind of down that category of the more traditional type of work that you would think.
Yeah.
But it's very noticeable. You know, it's really big and flashy, and you know, you're really competing for eyes, right?
In that platform.
So, but it was a really fun project because of the fact of combining animation, obviously, you know, making that very illustrative look, and then a very graphic component, and you know, having to support obviously Luxottica and the product and advertising. So we love things like briefs like this where there's lots of complicated stuff that need to come together. That's stuff that we get really excited about.
Have you done much in the way of permanent installations, like the creative for permanent ones?
Yeah. There's actually a couple of large corporate pieces that are done for companies, which is also a very exciting, interesting field for us. And once again, you know, we tend to get involved into a lot of different things, but there's a common thread, and the common thread is trying to build something that does something. I know that it doesn't seem like much, but there is actually a real thought behind it, right? Mm-hmm. We really love work that has a functional quality. And sometimes even artistic pieces actually have a very functional quality, right? Like, you know, I refer frequently to the Samsung screen in Korea, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
And the anamorphic stuff.
That's right, anamorphic stuff. And it's interesting because some of that work obviously feels very artistic, but it's very, you know, it has a great effect on that area. It defines completely a place. So there is a function to it, you know, and the function is not always directly advertising, which is actually one of the issues that I have sometimes in the industry, is how directly focused on advertising a lot of this signage is, missing some of the opportunity. But yeah, we've done some large installations, you know, on corporate buildings. And like I said, that's also a very interesting field sometimes, because you're trying to create something that is doing something for the audience. And so it's entertaining, it's interesting, it defines the space, it does something for people passing by. It's still telling a story of a company, and there's lots of different ways that you can do that. You know, sometimes it's a very explicit story, but sometimes it's just a composition of impressions as well.
Right. If I look on your kind of portfolio page in the experiential side, I see you did the Sheraton Dallas and Verizon stores and things like that.
Yeah. So very broad. It's very broad spectrum. The Sheraton was a very fun project. It is a very fun project. We're still engaged in the project. We busy refresh their content from time to time. A very interesting placement of this two structures that are wrapped with screens, because being on the doorway, they kind of have this almost like arch triumph feel, right? Where you just kind of, you know, they are greeting people on the way in, but they also are still addressing all the people on the inside, from the bar and the restaurant inside the lobby. And so they kind of have a dual function. And so it's really interesting to create work that has that impactful effect on people that come in, but it also has an ambient, peaceful environment feeling for the people that are on the inside. So, yeah, that's been an extremely fun project. We're actually rolling out a couple of new modules for that in the next couple of months.
Your managing director, Candy, I was trading emails with her, and she was saying how experiential is in something of a Wild West phase.
Yeah.
What do you guys mean by that?
Well, you know, if you think about advertising, you know, in its infancy, there was a lot of defining what advertising could do. And then if you fast forward all the way to today, there is a science to advertising. You know, there's a lot of things that are just so clearly defined to the point that, unfortunately, there's also expectations on both ends, right? You just kind of know how certain things are going to look and going to sound. But it's because there's clarity of how people react to things and what works. And so, in truth, there's always creative space in every place. But when something gets very, 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 you know, refined and it's not in infancy anymore, after a while, there's just a little bit less space. But digital signage is really, in a sense, it's at in infancy. You know, there's still firsts that are coming out. And so people are kind of going at it in a lot of different ways. Sometimes they're kind of going at it a little backwards.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people that, for example, will look at a space and they'll say, we need a screen there. And that seems to make sense because, you know, they're looking at it in terms of hardware. You know, let's put an opportunity there. But obviously the screen is just an opportunity. It's just an empty potential. And when people walk by a screen, they don't see a screen. They just see what's on the screen. Mm-hmm. And so it's odd how a lot of these installations are basically being done that way, without a real strategy of necessarily what are we trying to do with the space? What do we want people to see? Mm-hmm. And then sourcing the technology that supports it. You know, there's really a lot of situations where people are saying, we're going to put something there and somebody will figure out what goes on.
Yeah, I've heard stories. I remember a friend of mine who's a creative director for a digital shop in Toronto area saying he got a call one day from an AV integrator who had put up a big LED video wall somewhere, or maybe might have been LCD because it was going back 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. And the guy was asking, do you have any content we could put on this thing because we're lighting it up today? And Michael, my friend, was on the other end of the phone just looking at the phone going, what the hell?
I know.
But, you know, that happens.
Well, I mean, that actually happens a lot. You mentioned that, and I know it seems crazy, and I think to most people listening to this, it might seem like a very odd thing, but it actually happens so much that people have contacted us and asking us for blank content to have for those situations, just generic stuff to fill screens. So it's a little bit crazy, right? I mean, if you imagine that movie theaters did that, you know, they just put up screens and they said, well, something will go here. and, you know, and speaking of that, I tend to make this kind of trite comment that, you know, when's the last time you told somebody, hey, let's go down to the theater to have a great new projector?
Yeah.
You know, people are very unaware of the technology. The technology is transparent to the user. At the same time, I get it because I understand how people, especially coming from real estate, they feel like if we had something here, right? Yeah. Again, they want the potential. And because, like I said, because this is a little bit of far west, because it is a little bit loose, you know, right now you can go to a number of people to have a conversation about creating an experience. You could be talking to an architect. And that kind of makes sense. You know, you could be talking to a company like us, you know, a video company. You could be talking to a hardware manufacturer. You can be talking to an integrator. So there's lots of different people you could be interfacing with. And obviously, they're all coming from a different position. You know, so, you know, you go to Best Buy to buy a TV. You walk out with a TV. Well, there is an understanding that there's content out there you're going to see. There's going to be subscriptions. The content is a given. And so with the same mindset, you go out, you buy a gigantic screen. Maybe it's just a, you know, an ultra wide anamorphic screen. And all of a sudden, there's really nothing for that thing out there. That has to be made by somebody. And so, you know, for us, sometimes that's you know, amusing and entertaining because somebody hands you a very weird form. And then we suddenly have to figure out, okay, who's here? What are they doing? What is the story? You know, what kind of mindset are they in? How long are they going to dwell? Like, we have to busy in reverse trying to figure out what we can make with the space. And that's, that can be fun for designers. But as you can imagine, you know, there's opportunity in kind of planning things if possible.
You mentioned being somebody who has an affinity for things that have a function to them. Big experiential / engaging displays need to have a point, or is it enough to be sort of wow factor / eye candy?
I don't know that I can make, you know, such a blank statement. In my opinion, that's, you know, there's always a point, right? Is a point. You know, I'm in Italy right now, which is where I'm from. There's a lot of art in Italy. There's a lot of public art. There's also a lot of decorated places. So most buildings are decorated. Most gates are decorated. You just kind of, you kind of grow up with this idea that you're kind of used to wherever you lay your eyes, there's going to be something pretty. Somebody has taken the time to decorate it. But there's also a lot of functional spaces out there, you know, especially modern spaces that tend to be very functional. You know, you have, there's just like a certain sense of what a strip mall looks like, and it's a very undecorated place, right? There's a lot of very pragmatic places. So certainly something that is just pretty and the spectacle can really do quite a bit for a space. And that's a function. You know, making something beautiful is definitely a function. So when I say function, I don't mean that automatically it is creating
it's showing rail schedules or whatever.
Exactly. It's exactly right. So the function, you know, but the point that I make is that, you know, if you're trying to make a place interesting, then maybe advertising is not the right thing to do with that space.
Right.
And so, for example, I actually, there's an airport that I won't mention that went through a very large...
Go ahead.
A very large renovation, and part of the renovation, they put these two gigantic screens, and all they do is show advertising. And it's almost like, you know, it's almost like an intentionally designed strategy to make people ignore the two biggest screens on Earth. Because when you think about it, I don't know if there's a bigger softball than people in an airport. I mean, people are just bored, and pretty much everything you do in an airport is waiting. So you wait in a line, then you go wait in another line, and if you're not waiting in line, you're just simply waiting. And so it'd be pretty easy to entertain those people. But that's the one thing that we have gotten all really, really good at doing is not looking at advertising.
Yeah.
And so, you know, 100% advertising programming is really not a good use of that space. And so then it's a whole lot of people that are wasting a lot of opportunity.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
Is there a monetization model for this sort of thing where it is experiential, it's visually interesting, but it's you're doing something that's going to pay for this what is still pretty expensive tech?
I think there's lots of them. You know, I think there's lots of different ones. You know, if you have a mall and more people are coming, that has value, and so. What's the monetization for the children area in the mall, right? Clearly is the fact that you're creating traffic, you're attracting people, people can spend time. So there's really a lot of, you know, monetization strategies in for a lot of different situations. And that's what I mean by function. You know, those are those situations where you can have that conversation and say, what is it that we want in this case, right? I think sometimes people, like I said, fall into that trap of directly monetizing something and say, well, we're just going to sell space on it. But that's not automatically something that is going to work. So sometimes you have to be, you know, a little bit more strategic about really what do we want out of that space and how is that going to be functional for us. And sometimes, you know, traffic, the quality of the experience of the viewer, you know, you think about theme parks, and theme parks are, you know, money machines in a lot of different forms, right? People pay the door to get in, and everything in there is expensive, and then they're just gigantic shops. But people are enjoying themselves. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the point. The point is that you're trading something for something. You're giving the audience something, and you're charging them for it. And I think everybody's very comfortable with that. Everybody's okay. You know, we all don't mind paying for a meal that we enjoy, and we don't mind paying for a film that we enjoy. It's a, you know, that's a good, you know, I guess win-win, you know, and the consumers are comfortable with it. So I think if you make a space worth people's times and people have a good experience, then they're okay rewarding you, you know, by spending their money on your experiences or all the products that you offer. I think that's the, and really that's in the end what it comes down to, right? You're trying to make sure that it's a dialogue between, you know, two groups. And so right. You want to give the audience something that fits with their story. So where they are, what they're trying to do in this specific place, that makes sense for where they are, and people will reward you.
So when you engage with a new customer or maybe re-engage with an existing one, what's the process? How do you kind of sit down and kind of set the intention for the project?
Yeah, that's a varied answer because the customers are coming from lots of different places. Mm-hmm. You know, and so sometimes you have people that come to the table with nothing. I mean, they just know that, for example, have a property and they want to embellish it, yeah. Or they want to create something that will give a sense of value. Or sometimes they'll have a property and the city is asking them to invest in art, and that's it. and they have to invest some percentage. So there's lots of different agendas, but you also have, you know, companies with marketing teams on the inside who have a very clear sense of what they're trying to do. And so it varies quite a bit, you know, so it depends on really what people bring to the table. So when people have no real idea what they're trying to do, we try to kind of take a real broad approach and explore the opportunity, understand the space, understand the audience, understand who could be there, who is there, what would be good for them. And it's essentially a design thinking exercise, as you can imagine. It's mm-hmm. just really clearly understanding who we are on our end, and meaning us and as the client. And so understanding what they do, what they offer, what they can do that is positive, and obviously what they have to gain, and then do the same thing for the audience, and then try to draw vectors, trying to understand really what's a place that we're both where groups can overlap in a natural way, and then translate it into the design.
mm-hmm. When you're producing content for a client, how does the conversation go when you're talking about kind of the sustainability, the shelf life mm-hmm. of the piece? Because I've seen lots of work that looks fantastic, but it's there too long.
That's, you know, right.
It becomes stale dated.
That's right. And that also changes greatly because it changes, you know, for example, based on how frequently people go to a place. So, you know, going back to the example of theme parks, sometimes some of those experiences stay for a really, really long time because you're not just going there, you know, every day. And so you might experience it twice in the arch of 7-8 years.
Right.
And so it doesn't quite get old, but you put something, you know, in front of
a mass transit terminal, like a big subway.
That's exactly right.
Or whatever.
And the same people now are going over twice a day or four yeah. times a day every day. And now it's quite different. And so, again, that really comes down to, you know, what we're talking about, to really understand the situation, understand the use. And then, of course, there's always the component of you know, finance. I mean, what makes sense financially, right? Mm-hmm. So that if the frequency is important, then you have to be creative about creating content that has that ability to change frequently. And like you said, that really is an application, you know, of the space or the use. And so they're all different. I mean, but that's something mm-hmm. that definitely figures. I mean, we're definitely trying to be really focused on that as well. How frequently refreshes, how refreshes are going to come together, and, you know, is there going to be a need for, you know, drastically changing the content because maybe it is like an array of different pieces, or is there a general, or is there a story mm-hmm. that gets to be evolved? I mean, we have some corporate clients for whom we're busy redoing or modifying the piece every couple of years, and which is a fairly long period of time, but mm-hmm. it is kind of an evolution of the same story. So it's still kind of, you know, satisfying the original brief is just, you know, new content, new footage, new design. Right. New.
One of the workarounds for the cost of content and the challenge of keeping it refreshed has been doing visualized data. You know, there's several pieces out there in the world at airports, in
That's right.
public buildings and so on. I'm a fan of that from the set it and forget it side, that it's very efficient yeah. and everything else.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to wonder more and more about its effectiveness, because I just wrote about one at the Sydney, Australia Convention Center mm-hmm. yesterday. It's a 96 meter long display, and it's got this right. sort of stream of it almost looks like a blue screen of death, but it's not, obviously. Mm-hmm. Code running across the screen.
That's right.
And it looks visually interesting, but I wonder sometimes when people are looking at this, do they know what they're looking at, and does it matter whether they know what they're looking at?
That's right. Well, you know, it's funny. In some degree, it doesn't. I mean, so some of those pieces are, you know, they're really much more akin to art. And the idea mm-hmm. of generative, something that is generative work yeah. that is generated by data. In the end, it's really more... It's really more for our satisfaction to know that it's generated by data, but it's a very plastic piece. I mean, it looks like what it looks like, and mm-hmm. if it's beautiful and it's interesting to see, then it's something you can watch for a period of time. It's like watching a waterfall; mm-hmm. you can pretty much watch it endlessly, right? Because it's True. Just naturally interesting. And so, if you're able to recreate that natural sense of something that has just enough evolution, enough variety, but some inherent qualities that are attractive, then that piece can kind of stand forever. And then when it was generated by data or not, it is kind of, you know, I don't upset anybody, but it's kind of irrelevant, you know, and it's very transparent to most users. It becomes mm-hmm. really, really cool for designers. You know, people get really, really excited sometimes, you know, but is there really, you know, visible? I don't know if you're an audiophile or if you know audiophiles. You know, I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to stuff, and I love audio stuff. And sometimes mm-hmm. you're looking at an amplifier and you know that its distortion is so low, and but in the end, you're not really hearing that. You just know it, you know, so it becomes kind of a intellectual appreciation that your body really just ignores, if that
yeah.
makes sense.
I guess it's a little bit like buying a car. In the old days, everybody would open the hood and look at the engine and all
yeah.
that. And now I suspect 99% of people never even flip the yeah. hood open because they don't know what they're looking at, and who cares?
Yeah, exactly. It's just knowledge. It's nice to know about the product. It's nice to know what's happening behind it, but it doesn't necessarily affect your experience of it. So, but it's interesting. It's interesting mm-hmm. work, and it's cool that work is out there. It's cool that people have found a way to kind of, you know, in some way intellectually, you can compare the fact that something moves very naturally but still generated by data, and so you can say, well, the way the flow of data is kind of ends up being similar to a form of chaos, control chaos, which is similar to nature. That stuff is all really interesting in theory. In the end, if the piece is beautiful, then it's beautiful to look at. And then at the same time, like you said, you know, it can also be, you know, it can be puzzling. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, a lot of abstract work is, you know, so I think there's a lot of good into that. And as its right application, like you mentioned, you know, airport is a good place for a piece of art, especially a piece of art that is constantly evolving. Is, you know, you're kind of you have the perfect audience in that case to, you know, sit down and contemplate something that is just transforming. You know, I think there's something, I think that's really a good application actually for that kind of work.
You mentioned the Samsung board in Seoul, in
right.
Gangnam, that area. There's been a lot of stuff on LinkedIn, and I guess more broadly on social media, about these anamorphic displays. Are you seeing a lot of demand for that from inbound customers?
Yeah, we are. There's definitely conversations that come about it. And, you know, all these things, it's always kind of funny. We were very, very experimental at the beginning of our career as a motion design studio. I was very interested in really doing just to see what you could do with the medium.
Pushing the boundaries, yeah.
Yeah, just to see. And it wasn't like a desire to be different. It was just like a curiosity about what the software and the medium could do because it was new. We did a video of photoparallaxing, which is a very trite technique today, but you know, in 2004 or 5, it was very new. And we put it out there and it was a video for RJD2. It was the first video that MTV put, on their online, presence. And for a couple of years, it was a daily email of somebody asking us to repeat that. And then years later, we did something else, which was basically combining cell animation. A couple of years later, it's combining cell animation with 2D work, with digital work, and trying to kind of mix all these techniques. Another thing that also became very popular eventually. And then for a couple of years, it was everybody asking for the same thing. And so that's kind of how it works, you know. Somebody puts a waterfall in the lobby, everybody wants a waterfall in the lobby, yeah. You know. And the first waterfall is super cool. I mean, it's a really cool idea and it's great. You know, the 40th that is out there.
Yeah. Oh, there's another one.
Yeah. It's still cool, but it, you know what I mean? It's, you know, it's not necessarily like, basically what ends up happening is that you as an artist, you find yourself getting constantly typecast.
Yeah.
And then you're constantly trying to break that typecast because what you're trying to say to people is, look, I can do, you know, a lot of different things. And that was an idea, and I have more ideas, right? And so, but people just tend to, it's easy to shop for a thing that you see than for ones you don't see. And so I think that's what happens. You know, mm-hmm. That screen you mentioned is very successful. It's very smart. It's also very simple as for consumption. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's really good. You know, I mean, it's just a beautiful, fun thing, and I love to see it. And that's kind of what you want it to be. You want it to be something that you just said, I'd love to go see that in person. And so now everybody's thinking like, oh, that's it. That's the solution, right?
Right. But you have to kind of break it to them that it only, the visual effect really only works from a very specific angle.
It does. It does. I know, exactly. So there's an investment to say, here is this, you know, massive thing that's visible for a really large surface, but it really only works for one slice of it.
Yeah.
But when you are in that slice, it's pretty cool.
It's amazing.
But it's a very good solution. And I think, it's like, it's a great thing. And that's what I was saying, you know, what we were saying earlier about what you brought up about the Wild West is it really is wide open right now. Because when we do something that is going to be on a curved surface and everybody's going to be really stoked about that, and then there's going to be something else because there is a lot of space for exploration, which, like I said, that's kind of what's attracting us a lot. You know, mm-hmm. It's a lot of opportunity to try stuff and do new things.
All right, Alberto, that was a great conversation. Just one quick last question. If people want to know more about your company, where do they find you online?
Well, leftchannel.com, of course. Yeah, clever. I know we went real deep on that one. But yes, leftchannel.com. And obviously we have also lots of work on Vimeo and lots of work on other channels as well. I hope people come and check us out.
All right. I appreciate you giving me some of your time.
All right. Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16:9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16:9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16:9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16:9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16:9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.